Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, coming to you on Tuesday, the 2nd of June, I believe.
Boom!
We are nearing, Andy, we're nearing the part where the Lakers are going to draft somebody, because as we all know by now, they get to keep the pick, and they're going to be the second pick in the draft, and this is very exciting news for everyone. And so, the big thing we're going to talk about with the Lakers, Andy, is the draft.
Yeah. As opposed to speculating about what they might do if they got the pick, you know, if they literally got the pick, now we're going to speculate what they might do now that they have the pick.
Now, this is
a very different show than some other ones we've done in the past.
This is not breaking news. We should make it clear. People have known about this for a little while.
We were on vacation when it happened.
We're going to get down and dig
whole
into...
Whole family vacation.
Dig into what the Lakers might do with the pick. We'll talk about the coaching carousel going on right now in the NBA, get into some of the Kevin Love stuff, and of course the NBA Finals, along with a couple other non-sports related stories. But anyway, let's start with the draft. Lakers picking a 2, 27, and 34. The parade of prospects has already started going through El Segundo. Not the good guys yet. I think Dakari Johnson was in earlier this week. He is somebody who is projected as a potential late first rounder, but it's mostly been maybe that guy at the end of the first round, but, you know, second round types like Rakim Christmas.
Yeah, so far,
my favorite guy in the draft.
So far, in terms of name recognition and names that would excite fans, it's not so much a parade of candidates as a bunch of dudes who look like they're loitering. Like, you really have no idea who they are. Like, you know, if Carl Anthony Towns walks in, everyone's going to know exactly who the guy is. Same with D'Angelo Russell. Same with Jahlil
Okafor.
He's
still got to sign in, though. Kobe does not sign in.
Yes, he does.
Kobe does
you know
not
why he does
sign
it?
In. Kobe does
you know
not
why he does
sign
it?
In anymore.
You know why he does it?
Why?
Because he's a regular guy just like you and me.
He puts his pants on one leg at a time.
He has his team of manservants
right.
Put on his pants for him
one leg at a time.
Yeah. But, yeah, I went one of these days for the parade, and I was bored. I was really bored.
I am not a parade person.
No.
I've seen the Rose Parade. I've seen, like, the parade at Disneyland.
My biggest nightmare is that I will one day, without recognizing the date, and I guess this is really more of a scenario that could happen to you than me, but that I will one day not recognize the date and just happen to be driving through Pasadena the day of the Rose Bowl
parade, and I will get stuck in it. That's hard to do. But, I'm not a big fan of parades, but supposedly next week is when maybe some of the bigger names will start coming through. It seems right now to be a big thing where it's either if Minnesota doesn't take Karl Anthony Towns, the Lakers will, and then everybody wins, except maybe Minnesota. If they don't, then you start getting the debate. Do you want Jahlil Okafor, who is still the consensus number two, or do you want one of the guards, whether it's Emmanuel Mudiay or
D'Angelo Russell?
And I think they're going to work out all of them. I've read even, too, that they may even bring in my man Kristaps Porzingis for
Michael
a workout.
Thompson loves him.
And this is the thing I love about Porzingis, and they're not going to draft him. Unless they just fall in love and they trade back or whatever. They're not going to draft him. And if they did, if they stayed at number two and they did, what would happen? What would be the reaction?
Oh, my God. People would be calling for Jim Buss's head.
Oh, it would be Armageddon. They'd freak out. I mean, my guy might be good. He might not. I have no idea. But 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, after the Lakers don't take Porzingis, because, of course, they're not going to take Porzingis.
And he ends up the next Dirk Nowitzki.
Right. Everyone's, what the fuck, Jimmy, why didn't you... Can you believe Jim Buss passed on Kristaps Porzingis?
You know who would have taken Porzingis? Jerry West.
Yeah.
Jerry West, I guarantee...
He'd have traded up to get him.
Absolutely.
So I am looking forward to that day when Kristaps Porzingis becomes the best player in the NBA and people crush Jim Buss for not taking him.
Why don't you take your damn baseball hat off, Jim?
Well, he should do that. But that
take your damn hat off and use your head for something else like drafting Porzingis.
So that'll happen. But where do you come down on this? Because neither one of us are scouts.
Knows jack shit.
Right. Neither one of us have watched college basketball, and you can't see my air quotes that I'm making, but I'm making them, like watching college basketball is a significant thing that, that talent evaluators do.
Most scouts tend to watch.
They watch.
They watch their fair share.
They watch their guy play. Now, we haven't done that.
If we learn, for example, that Jim Buss and the people under him watch no college basketball.
If they're like us?
They just go off Twitter.
Right. Yeah. Well, Chad Ford has him number two. So right. I think, you know, like, so I'm not going to be like, oh, if Jesse Buss happens to think that Russell is better than Okafor, I just hope he has a good reason. But based on...
Well, Chaz told him.
Now, I'm assuming you do this the way I do it, which is basically you take everyone else's opinion and you kind of aggregate it into something, picking out the things that...
And then I throw it out as my own decisively.
Exactly. But you take the things about what other people are saying that are worrisome to you,
mm-hmm.
and you note them.
Yes.
And then you take the things that you like,
mm-hmm.
and you note those as well. So with all of that said, where do you stand on who the Lakers should take with number two.
The good news, for real, is that the general consensus of all the people that I've been listening to who watch college basketball and presumably know what they're talking about.
Right, not me.
No. I haven't heard a damn thing you've said.
I saw Jahlil Okafor play like three times this year, and I have to say I wasn't that impressed.
Well, what I do like hearing, though, is that generally speaking, the top five, six, even like seven or so going on to like a Willie Cauley-Stein, and by the way, who actually added Trill to his name.
Yes,
Willie Cauley-Stein, which almost makes me want to draft
does him. Not speak to an imaginary friend who lives on his shoulder like Karl Anthony Towns does.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are definitely points in favor of Karl Anthony Towns. It seems like, though, the top seven or so guys are considered pretty much can't miss in the sense of you're not going to be drafting Hasheem Thabeet. You're not going to be drafting a Stromile Swift.
They're not major upside players.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Where everyone's thinking about their potential as opposed to what they've actually done.
Right. You may hate it now, but wait till you drive it.
My biggest concern with drafting Okafor, who is the consensus expectation if Karl Anthony Towns doesn't slip to number two, is that there's some redundancy with Julius Randle insofar as Okafor's true position. There are a lot of people who feel like he'd be better served as a four than a five offensively. And then especially defensively, there are a lot of question marks about him as a defensive center, him as just a defensive player in general.
And
Julius Randle at this point is a completely, he's an unknown defensive quantity. And there were a little bit of question marks about him defensively at the NBA level.
Yeah, and you see things like with Okafor that he is not the rebounder, the quality of rebounder. None of these bad. But rebound is actually one of the few stats that translates pretty well from the college to the pros. If you're a bad rebounder at the college level, you are almost never going to be a good rebounder when you become a pro. It might not hold up. But if you're bad at it there, you're not going to improve at the NBA level. I have a concern that so people say, well, his rebound rate's not what you would want. His block rate's not great for a 7 foot. There are all these things. And then you come back to it, but he's so skilled offensively. And in the modern NBA, the guy that can't guard the rim but is a dominant offensive center is Enes Kanter. I mean, you get guys like that, and you have a problematic setup in your front court.
We watched it happen with OKC this year in the playoffs. I mean, Kanter on one side of the ball is terrific. On the other side, he left OKC.
He is no better inside than I am.
Right. He left OKC with a lot.
I'm a horrible rim protector.
Yeah, you're a horrible everything.
I don't protect the rim.
And then in the meantime, D'Angelo Russell, who a lot of people really like, and I know the bits I've seen him play, he looks terrific. You know, he's explosive. He's got range.
Although Chad Ford said he's not any, for what you would be one of the second, third, fourth pick, is not an elite, elite, elite athlete.
But that's fine, but
pretty good.
Still pretty good. And the league is becoming so guard and wing driven. It's very, very easy to picture him playing with Jordan Clarkson. I mean, at this point, they both seem like they could be interchangeable combo guards with each other, but able to do it at a pretty good level, especially the way Russell's being projected. Depending on who you think you could get instead of Okafor, it does feel like Russell would be a justifiable pick. If I had to guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If I had to guess who they're going to take, they're going to end up taking Jahlil Okafor.
I think you can make a solid argument that Russell's actually a safer pick.
Yeah.
I mean,
safety, by the way, too, matters.
I don't mean safety in terms of public perception. I mean, safety in terms of the floor.
Right. I mean, because
what's the minimum level of competence you're going to get out of the player as opposed to the ceiling?
The thing about this with the. It's obviously would be great if the Lakers could find their next franchise cornerstone, the guy that is truly worthy of taking that metaphorical baton from Kobe. But it's not mandatory. What's mandatory is they don't fuck this up. I mean, for them,
player's got
to
be good.
The player has got to be good. So in this sense, safety matters. You do not want to reach with this number two, or go for the home run.
If Hashim Thabeet were available, I would pass.
Right, but like Andrew Bynum, when they took Andrew Bynum at 10, that was definitely a project. But aside from the fact that this team wasn't quite ready to compete, despite what maybe Kobe might have felt, you still had Kobe Bryant in his prime. You still had a very good Lamar Odom. You know,
Forget all that. There's a massive difference between the second pick and the 10th pick in terms of the track record that you can expect out of. I don't care about.
I just meant that Bynum was the first lottery pick they had in over a decade.
There's a massive difference between stretching for potential at number 10.
But it ain't like other people have done
it. Number two.
It ain't like other people
have
done it.
I'm not saying that. I agree with you. I mean, again, Hashim Thabeet. But the
Anthony Bennett.
You are far less likely to find a transformational player at 10 than you need to be able to find one at 2.
Either way, the truly important thing for the Lakers is that they don't fuck this up. And it seems like Okafor or Russell will actually be safe, good picks along those lines.
In hindsight, obviously, one of them might turn out to be good, one of them, but you know, nobody is going to look at it and say, ooh, that, you know, you draft Porzingis, you're drafting a little bit on that upside, and I've seen the footage that Grantland has out there and all that kind of stuff. But if you draft Okafor or you draft Russell, you're in pretty safe territory in terms of what people think you're getting and the quality of the NBA. Who's going to be better? I don't know. There's no way to know.
Do you think there's any chance they're going to trade it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the problem is, what do you trade it for? And, you know, like the DeMarcus Cousins thing is always something people throw it out. Okay, well, the number two and Randall and 27 when you start to put all this stuff together, it's hard for the Lakers to put together a package for a superstar that doesn't leave them in position of having to figure out how to hold on to their superstar. You know, the one that they just acquired.
You're basically robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly. What I think they need to do is keep the picks, make them. You can't lure Kevin Durant with Boogie Cousins and nothing. That's not going to get Kevin Durant,
likely.
You know, and that's what they would be left with. Boogie Cousins and cap space. That's not going
to
get done.
And maybe if you can find Durant and somebody else to commit at the same time, that might be doable. But again, you're playing a very, very big bet.
Right.
You're playing a huge bet, and if you strike out, all you're doing is wasting. You're wasting the time you have with DeMarcus Cousins.
There's not a KD trade coming in this draft. I mean, the thing that I find most interesting is when Mitch says that because they have 27 and 34, which would be three good picks. And when he says that they, you know, said it a few times, they may not carry what amounts to three rookies plus Randall, who is essentially a rookie on the team next year. And that kind of talk, Andy, and depending on the reasoning, makes me a little nervous. If you're saying we don't want four rookies on our team because that's not going to be, you know, we're not going to be able to be competitive that way. Red flags
exactly.
Everywhere. You don't get where you are because that doesn't matter. If you want to say, we don't think we can really properly give the instruction to that many young players at once. We want to stagger them out so that their free agencies don't all hit at the same time. We want to maybe keep a guy in Europe for a year.
There's a guy we can take at 34. We don't think he's ready, but we think he's going to be great in two years.
Whatever. All of those reasons are fine. Anything, though, that has to do with four rookies. You can't compete
with four
rookies next year.
How does
this
rookie at 34 play with Kobe?
Right. I mean, Jesus. So, yeah, but other than that, I mean, I think they are... I get the feeling they are not planning on doing something really foolish. I don't feel like they are planning on, you know, they're not going to do some sort of Kobe appeasing weird home run thing. They're not going to do, you know, I think fortunately a lot of the potentially really stupid things may not even be available to them. They don't have enough stuff for Kevin Durant. or whatever. So I think they're going to draft a quality player at number two, most likely. I think they'll probably take, you know, a couple decent prospects at 27, 30. They've done pretty well at this, actually, over the last few years. Moving on, Andy, to our big NBA headlines, which is essentially just one.
It's a headline with some sub-headlines.
Subheads. Alvin Gentry to New Orleans, Scott Skiles to Orlando, and the mayor, Fred Hoiberg, leaves Ames, Iowa, and the Iowa State Cyclones to become the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. Let's start with Scott Skiles.
You know, it's funny. The reaction from especially a lot of basketball media was that Scott Skiles felt in many ways like the Orlando version of what the Lakers did with Byron Scott. They're bringing in one of their own, splashy name, can get the longtime fans excited. He's associated with some success that they've had. But listening to Zach Lowe's podcast, Low Post, most recent one with Paul Flannery and Nick Friedell, Zach pointed out, I did not know this, but Zach, I know, is very plugged in with these type of people he talked to. Scott Skiles is revered, he said, in coaching circles. I mean, like, this is a guy that people, you know, his peers really feel like can coach his ass off. And if you look at the trends of when he's run a different team, you know, yes, he burns players out. Yes, his teams don't look particularly magic.
Tom Thibodeau light.
Right. They don't look particularly imaginative offensively. You know,
they don't look magical.
But they play really hard. And they always get better defensively. And Orlando certainly has room to grow defensively.
They need some structure. Yeah. They got a lot of young talent, but they're all like puppies that are just running around. And they need some sort of structure there. He'll be able to provide. I actually kind of like that hire. I love Alvin Gentry to New Orleans. I think he is going to give Anthony. It's not like they you know, what's his face? Monty Williams never figured it out defensively. And even though Alvin doesn't have a reputation as a great defensive coach, he'll be able to find somebody to be his defensive guy. He's another guy who is very well liked, very well respected. And any defensive coordinator type guy would drool at the opportunity to get their hands on Anthony Davis, still developing with Omer Asik and all that kind of stuff. So,
actually, Holiday's a good defender, too.
He can be. And so I think, you know, assuming they can stay healthy and all that stuff, Alvin will get them going a little bit offensively.
Players
he'll unlock
love
that.
Alvin Gentry.
And he's a little like the Skiles thing in the sense that, you know, guys may eventually, he burns out the other way where he just gets them maybe a little too loose or whatever it might be. But I love that hire.
It's always felt to me like Alvin Gentry has never been in the right place at the right time when it comes to the teams that he's been the head coach of. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge, huge opportunity for him. I mean, regardless of who is around Anthony Davis, that you have Anthony Davis in a couple years.
That's like having LeBron.
Right. In a couple of years, he's going to be so good, it may not matter.
Right.
Who's
he becomes that guy who, okay, you have him, and therefore the rest of it doesn't matter. The Hoiberg thing, I think, is interesting only because obviously they ran Tom Thibodeau out of town, and we'll dig into that.
But
in
at
a
least
second.
They did it with class.
Yes. Well, as they always do in Chicago.
Yeah.
They really are a classy bunch of people. Never had any trouble with Phil Jackson. Never had trouble with Scottie Pippen.
Well, they're an organization.
Always thinking of what is really the best and most mature way we can handle interpersonal conflict.
Well, they're an organization that really believes in the idea of not burning your bridges.
No,
especially, too, you want to make sure that everybody feels like family when they're in the organization. Mm-hmm. And when they leave the organization, once a bull,
here's the thing about,
never a bull.
The thing about bridges, Andy, is if you build them, people might walk across it, and they don't want that.
That's true.
No. So they hire Fred Hoiberg, and
they actually show that scene from the bridge over the River Kwai right before they told Thibodeau to leave. They actually showed that on a huge screen with a bridge exploding, and they said, you can take that your box of shit out and leave.
And so, yeah, it's one way to do it. And so you have Hoiberg coming in, and this is a place where the expectation is going to be very different because it's not like Thibodeau was disappointing. You know, he ran a very
Thibodeau.
Good – either one of them.
Thibodeau.
They were both very – you know, they were both of them were very successful in
Chicago.
Actually,
you can tell that that's a real sign that – the coach and the organization were never really on the same page. Nobody could agree on the man's last name pronunciation.
Yeah, no, it's true. And so, you know, you run him out of town, you bring in Fred Hoiberg. Generally speaking, I think the record of college coaches who come in is disappointing, although that does seem to be shifting a little bit. I don't know how Billy Donovan's going to do in Oklahoma City. I didn't love that hire. But obviously, Brad Stevens, who is more, I think, like the Fred Hoiberg type guy, where you're taking a guy, you're not taking the dude from the established 20 years in this place, won national titles, whatever. You're really plucking a guy who's considered a pro coach from an up, you know, a solid up and coming program with, I think they think, the basketball chops and perhaps better interpersonal communication skills than Tom Thibodeau had.
It'd be hard to find a guy.
Because, I mean, it's not like, let's not pretend that Tibbs didn't have his own shortcomings here.
No, he didn't. And I mean, Nick Friedell, actually, in that Low Post podcast I was referencing, talked about how, you know, for all the
talk. So basically,
talk,
everything you're saying today, you're just repeating what you got on that podcast.
Similar to how I evaluate college prospects.
Right.
Actually, by the way, too, if people want to, in lieu of hearing me regurgitate opinion on Alvin Gentry, I would actually recommend Bourbon Street Shots, most recent podcast. They actually have Amin Alhassan, ESPN Zone, who used to work in the Phoenix front office with Alvin Gentry.
Talk about
Alvin Gentry if you want to learn more. That I
you
didn't
are
just...
a genuine aggregator of content today.
But you know what? At least I give credit. I do not steal. I give credit.
I steal.
What were we talking about?
Like, I remember when I wrote Old Man in the Sea. That was a particularly fertile time in my life. And then I directed The Godfather.
Yeah.
And I felt good about that, too. Would you fire Byron to hire Tibbs? Because Thibodeau is a better coach than Byron Scott.
Yes.
He's going to be more sought after than Byron Scott.
Oh, I was going to say, Nick Friedell talked about how, for all the talk that, by the way, was real when it comes to discord between the front office and...
Oh, yeah, they weren't making that up.
And Thibodeau, and the way that, quite frankly, the front
players,
office never...
Players
were getting extremely burned out on Tibbs. So it's not like they fired a guy that everyone in that locker room loved. Like, I think, relatively speaking, Mark Jackson was more popular in the Warriors
inside
locker
the Warriors,
room.
Absolutely. Scotty Brooks was a much more popular
guy.
Scott Brooks was a situation where you're taking a guy and you're saying, you know what, we've done everything we possibly can with this coach, and it just hasn't been good enough. Is it, quote-unquote, fair to fire Brooks? No, but we need to get better. And the easiest thing that we have access to right now is to change coaches and see if that next guy can give us the 3 or 4% that we weren't getting from Brooks. Thibodeau is a great coach, but at this point, it was just they were never going to get anywhere else with him. And this had truly run its course. But he hasn't run his course here yet. He's a coach who's on the market, who is definitely, you know, a more respected guy and a better coach than Byron.
Yes.
He's a better basketball coach with less charm.
Mm.
Less
Byron
charming.
Is more charming.
Byron is more charming than Thibodeau, but
more charisma when he folds his arms.
Thibodeau light in every other way.
Yeah.
Would you let him go? Because I'm a big believer in, if you got somebody, access to somebody, I don't care if it's fair, unfair, or whatever, run the guy out of town and bring in the better guy.
Under most circumstances, Brian, I would, because I tend to agree with you. If you can get the better guy, get the better guy. Unless you have an entire locker room of really, you know, especially the really important players saying, do not dare get rid of this guy. In most cases, I would say
right.
Do it.
All things being equal, though.
All things being equal. But the problem is, for the Lakers, all things are not equal at the moment. First of all, they are trying to project the image of stability and trying against a lot of failing to put that out there. And even if it's for an upgrade, your fourth head coach since the 2011-2012 season does not project
stability. Doesn't stay stable to me.
No, it projects the image of having no idea how you want to get and how you're going to get towards a winning environment. You're just throwing crap against the wall and hoping something sticks.
Right.
Plus, two, this roster isn't ready for a guy like Tom Thibodeau. I mean, for a coach of his pedigree, the roster's not there yet. And by the time they may get there, he may have already burned out a lot of these guys.
Yep.
And it doesn't feel like the right time for someone like Tibbs, even though, again, like you said, Brian, he would be an upgrade. There's no question.
Oh, yeah. I think you're exactly right. This is one of those times where you have to – You have to weigh where you are. It's just like the front office needs to know where they are in terms of what trades they make. Same thing now. In 2 or 3 years when they have a good team, I think a lot of people think they may run Byron out of town.
If he's still there.
I kind of hope they do. I mean, or at the very least, I hope they are willing to upgrade at that point.
Well, I mean, they will.
I don't want to fire Byron just to fire him. No. I want to fire him so because there's a really good candidate out there.
But you also don't want to hire. I was going to say, you also don't want to hire Byron just to hire him. And if you fire Byron right now to bring in Tibbs, it's going to look like the huge reason you brought Byron in the first place was a PR thing. I mean, it will expose
And just because that's true doesn't mean you want to make it look that way.
Right. Don't let people behind the curtain.
Okay. So our other big story of the day, Lakers related, Kevin Love is rumored to be available.
Right.
Depending on who you talk to.
Dave McMenamin, for example, whose opinions I'm going to make sure to recycle.
There are a lot of people around the NBA who have been swearing to people that Love is available and that the Lakers are still in play. And that has been widely reported. But this weekend, last weekend in Cleveland was asked about it, and he said he expects to be a Cavalier on opening day next year and ready to play off the shoulder surgery. Now, obviously, a lot of things can happen. Love can opt in. He can opt out.
He can opt out to re-sign.
Right. There's all kinds of stuff. Do you buy what he's selling? That he genuinely expects to be a Cav next year, keeping in mind that no sane human being would ever commit to it until they have to publicly.
I believe that he's covering his bases. I believe Kevin Love may be sincere in wanting to come back or sincere in expecting to come back. Like it's going to end up happening. But I also believe that he's covering his bases. Like you said, Brian, he's not committing to anything. And he also may be already planning his exit strategy, which is basically, look, I want to come back. I'm happy being here. I never said I wanted to leave. But then he's thinking about the fact that Timofey Mozgov, since acquiring him, and he's, I think, projected to be on the roster next year. It's
a
team option, cheap pickup.
They're going to keep Mozgov.
Imagine they won't keep him. Mozgov already on the roster next year. Tristan Thompson, I think general manager LeBron James has made very clear. He's going to get a new deal.
And handsomely paid.
There may not be really a space for Kevin Love. And he may already be looking at the future landscape and realizing, I'm not as necessary as Cleveland once thought I was when they traded for me, but I don't want to look like the guy who bailed, because this would be the second team in a row that I would be perceived as bailing on.
So, right, and this time you'd be bailing because your stats aren't good enough, because your role isn't what you want, and all this other stuff.
I mean, right now,
while you'd be bailing on a team that looks like a fairly sure bet to reach at least 3 more finals over the next 5 years.
Right, but I mean,
particularly if you stay.
If you look at Kevin Love's projected role for next year, if everyone's still in play, maybe Mozgov comes off the bench, but he could be a sixth man. He could be an oversized stretch three.
He's not going to be that. He's not going to be that.
He could be the starting power forward, but playing fewer minutes than he wants. He could have a more reduced role than he wants. And these are things that I don't think Kevin Love should necessarily be killed for caring about. I mean, just because you want to be in a winning situation, you don't want to feel like you're just along for the ride.
So here's the thing. If he really wants to leave because his... And I agree with you. It is reasonable to... I mean, people put stuff in front of winning all the time. Kobe put his value as a basketball player and a draw above winning when he took the $48.5 million. And I don't blame him for doing it, but that's the reality. People make decisions all the time that they put ahead of pure winning. It happens all the time. But if he left Cleveland, the reasons would basically boil down to happiness, however you want to define it. Happiness with role, happiness getting his numbers so he feels like he's fulfilled as a player and all this other stuff. And so if you're the Lakers, do you necessarily want to give a guy $100 million or so who is leaving a situation in large part because he's concerned about his numbers and he's concerned about his own personal success more than the overall opportunity to win, which cannot possibly be recreated here in initially at least, as well as it's being created in Cleveland.
Well, I mean, look, I wouldn't give Kevin Love $100 million if I'm the Lakers.
Set that stuff. We'll get to that in a second, but let's do this one first.
I mean,
how much would that impact your willingness to give him the money in the first place? Well,
actually,
that's a lot of money.
Actually, not very much. Okay. I'll tell you why. Because by that
now, this
definition,
is you.
No,
this is not Friedel.
I have not heard anybody
this
else say
this. This is not Zach Lowe.
I've heard nobody else say this.
This is not
my,
Rick Bucher.
No, this is my actual opinion formulated by only me.
Hubie Brown.
No, I've heard nobody else say this. By the definition or the prism that you're measuring this through, the Lakers can't pay anybody because nobody who wants to win would even join them. So by that standard, you can't crush the Lakers. I mean, you can't crush Kevin Love for joining them because otherwise they should never pay anybody anything because that guy only wants the money because they can't win.
Or I guess you're only talking about free agents on bad teams.
Exactly. I mean, and even then, it's like you're essentially paying a guy to swap one bad team for another.
Right, so you understand my point. Like, is that a guy you? I mean, not to get
no,
not
because
to
like,
get too
like
deep
I said,
into,
if Kevin
you know,
if Kevin Love believes in the front office that they can build a winner around him in a couple years with a role that he likes more, and he's still a young guy. I mean, he could presumably spend like another 8 years on the team if, say, six of them in his mind are good. No, I'm not going to kill him.
He doesn't really care, though, about that part. What if he just is saying, I'm going to come here, I'm going to get my numbers, and it's warm outside?
Then he would have stayed. I mean, he would have stayed in Minnesota and bought a space heater.
It's not warm there.
I mean, I think.
The good news is.
I think, to be honest, that's a narrative you're projecting on him more than real reality.
Oh, it may be. But we have a lot of time between now and when Kevin Love has to make his decision. The point that Cleveland might give him an exit strategy to leave and avoid some of this talk, he's just a guy who's concerned about his own numbers, he doesn't really care about winning and all that, is a godsend to him.
Sure.
Because whether it's fair or not, and I think it's fair to say in some of the context of this conversation, not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's fair or not, that's going to be what people are going to say about it.
But I think it depends on where he goes, though. If, say, Boston's been one of the teams linked to have a lot of interest in Love that Love's had interest in, and he spent that last offseason going to Fenway games and bars and stuff like that. You know, assuming he's not still angry with Kelly Olynyk, the dirty white boy, over his shoulder separation, Boston is a team that looks like they're on the rise, and they look like they're being constructed in a way that could win in a couple years, even if they're not as good as Cleveland now. If Kevin Love goes to the Celtics,
right,
would you kill him for doing that?
No, probably not. I mean, playoff team. A lot of up and coming talent. You add him, that you could argue that Love on the Celtics with maybe one more piece, in internal growth makes them, a top five team in the East.
They will love him in Boston, and you know what I mean.
Well, he's white,
exactly.
But I get what you're saying, and that's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily fair to pick on, and it's also not even necessarily fair to pick on a guy for wanting to be happy.
Look, there are far more pressing reasons not to give Kevin Love $100 million. And as you know, we've talked about this a lot of times, Brian, I'm not big on bringing in Kevin Love.
He's not a great fit.
Right. He's a...
Especially if you end up... If you draft... Let's say they do draft Okafor on June 20th. Now he's really a bad fit.
Yeah, he's a terrible fit. I mean, Julius Randle and Kevin Love are polar opposite players, but they are still totally redundant in that you can only play them at power forward. You cannot play Kevin Love at center. Drafted D'Angelo Russell. You cannot play Julius Randle at the...
You can.
But it's a terrible
it's a
idea.
Bad idea.
You cannot play Julius Randle at the three. Even if you brought in Kevin Love to then trade Julius Randle, you still want to be in the best position to showcase Randle because he didn't play last year, which means you're either going to be starting out the season playing Love at the five where he doesn't belong, or trying to showcase Randle off the bench in limited minutes. It doesn't make sense.
Right, because if you say, we'll sign Love and we'll trade Randle, you're trading Randle at a low point of his value because nobody's actually
seen
him play.
And you don't want to do that with a former number 7 pick overall.
No.
And Love, for a guy that is really young and... I think it's fair to say, Brian, does not rely on athleticism and hops and explosiveness to get his numbers.
Right.
He gets hurt a lot.
Yes, it's better that he's a below the rim guy who gets hurt than an above the rim guy who gets hurt, because that starts to sap your athleticism. If that's the foundation of your game, you've got real problems. I'm just saying silver lining.
He'll just be a guy whose game remains intact while he can't play.
Right. Silver lining, I'm just saying, it's there. The good news is I actually think he's just going to stay in Cleveland for one more year. I think he'll take one more year there and then hit, which is very easy to justify because of the way the cap's going to jump up in 2 years, two seasons or whatever. The flip side of that being, if Cleveland really did offer him a max, I'd just take it.
Oh, because, God, yeah.
I mean, one more bad injury year, and he may not be that guy.
He's coming off a shoulder separation. Take
the money. Okay. That's that. We're going to talk a little finals here in a minute. But, Andy, we have a person of interest this week.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Yes. Formerly Bruce Jenner, and appeared in,
Vanity Fair.
Cover's not out yet, though. The cover is out, but the magazine comes out next month, correct?
June 9th. So that's next week.
So it's the July issue that comes out next week.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for straightening that out. I think by now everyone knows the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by now everyone knows, sort of has formed an opinion of it. ESPN is giving her the Arthur Ashe Award, the ESPYs,
the Courage Award,
that's certainly a controversial choice, I think. I don't care, which is, I happen to think one of the nicest things you could say about anybody going through this type of life change.
Well, you don't care you're not saying that you don't care insofar as a lack of empathy. You're saying
happy
you don't care.
She's happy. Happy
you're saying
she
you
can
don't
live
care
the way
in terms
she
of
wants.
Judgment.
I don't care. How Caitlyn Jenner lives her life, other than it makes me broadly happy when people can live in ways that are true to themselves, particularly when those ways don't negatively impact other people, which this doesn't. I don't care. It's like, I don't care about whether or not Bruce Jenner is a man or Caitlyn Jenner is a woman. It's fine. I don't care. It doesn't. Godspeed. What I find more interesting is the reaction to it. And, I saw a thing today on Yahoo that as these types of things happen with Michael Sambo, you start digging for the people who are negative about it. And, the AP made a mistake where they misidentified a pronoun. That's been a big thing.
Right. Well, I think that part of it is a little bit fuzzy because I didn't watch the interview, but it's my understanding the interview he did was with Diane Sawyer.
The initial interview he did with Diane Sawyer,
he actually said to refer to him as he, refer to her as he at that point. So people may be legitimately confused for
somebody
reasons.
Somebody in the AP just made a mistake.
Well, no, at the AP made the mistake was in the tweet about the cover using the phrase va-va-voom.
Right, like it's 1943.
At least they showed the respect to Caitlyn Jenner that they didn't point out how Dollface had a great set of gams.
Right. And so you can go through it and you can find
va-va-voom.
You can find negative comments from places like the New York Post, who put here she in quotes is, with a picture of the Vanity Fair cover. The Daily Caller did some mocking, or at least a columnist on it, The Blaze. They ran an op-ed calling Bruce Jenner a woman is an insult to women. Parents be aware, Matt Walsh on The Blaze wrote, soon the magazine rack and the checkout line at the supermarket will feature this profoundly disturbing image of Bruce Jenner. They did find the kid who used to play on like Drake and Josh or something on some Nick channel.
I don't know what that is.
Nickelodeon show. Said something that was insensitive and deleted it. Point being, you've had to dig a little bit. Overall, people have either kept their mouth shut or have been overwhelmingly positive towards Caitlyn Jenner.
Right.
So what interests me about this, we saw it with Michael Sam. I think we have reached a point where most people understand, unless they are throwing red meat to a particular constituency like the Blaze might be doing. Not the West Beverly Blaze, because that group, editorially, much more supportive, I think.
Well, they can't even get online back then.
Right. The New York Post.
Right.
Really? You know, unless you're throwing red meat, you most people understand that there is absolutely no currency in criticizing or being critical really in any way of a moment like this.
Right.
So it's muted. How much do you think this overwhelmingly positive reaction is overwhelmingly positive? How much of it is just people know better than to say anything?
There's both.
Because it matters. I mean, I think that answer, the same way it mattered with Michael Sam, and the same in terms of actually understanding
impact. I think it is both. I think people know the buzzwords to avoid. I think people, generally speaking, know how, if they want to, they can avoid making a statement that leaves them just getting pilloried. But I also think there is, generally speaking, more acceptance. I think there's
no question.
As opposed to, say, like Renee Richards. You know, I think there's definitely more acceptance now for Caitlyn Jenner, or there's more acceptance now for Michael Sam than there would have been for an openly gay NFL player, openly gay athlete 30, 40 years ago. So I think the answer to your question, Brian, is actually both.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is more sincere acceptance, and I think there's more sincere efforts to be PC. I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive. I think, though, where it can be problematic, though, is where people who may be genuinely accepting, or at the very least tolerant enough, but want to try to talk about this, feel afraid to talk about it because they're afraid that they may accidentally say something that gets them crushed.
Any question about it. I mean, we're long past an age where people get like, okay, Bruce Jenner is now Caitlyn Jenner. I'm going to tweet out, you know, scenes from the Rocky Horror Picture Show and everybody will think that's funny. No, nobody's going to think that's funny. You're going to have to delete that tweet and probably spend a long time apologizing, and rightly so, because you don't get it. But, I mean, there are a lot of things about this that are so far off the grid for what, as far as I can understand, would be a more normal transgendered person's experience, you know, between the money he has available for plastic surgery, the platforms that he has available to make him look that good on a Vanity Fair cover shot by Annie Leibovitz with every, you know, everything available to. There's so many things about this that I think. Will potentially confuse people about the experience. And it's something where everybody, myself included, are trying very hard to rapidly educate themselves.
I read an interesting article, Laverne Cox, who, mm-hmm. The actress from Orange is the New Black, the transgender actress, plays one of the prisoners inside the prison. I was trying to remember the actual.
Allow myself to introduce.
I was trying to remember
the prison.
Right.
But it's not relevant.
No, it's not relevant. I just wanted
it's
to finish.
It's also not a real prison.
No, but it may be. I mean, it's based on a real prison. I don't know if they use the actual prison name, but it's close enough that, you know, Pipes went to
a
real prison.
It's not a documentary, is my point.
Okay. Well, we might be getting sidetracked, but
I don't know.
She talked about how that emphasis on appearance. You know, on one hand, everybody wants to look attractive, whether you're talking male, female, transgender, gay, straight, whoever. People want to look attractive. People want to feel good about themselves. And obviously, Caitlyn being presented in that type of, lack of a better way of putting it, physically flattering
light. Well, look,
light.
She's wearing a tight white corset,
right,
that is, you know, not unlike what a Playboy bunny would wear.
Right. I mean, on one hand, it's tricky because if people started saying that they didn't find her attractive in any way or that she didn't look good.
She's hideous. She's got a horse face.
I imagine there would be tons of people responding with, you're homophobic. You're transphobic.
You're all these things. You're judging her based on her looks. That's
right,
not the important thing.
But the flip side of it is if you start focusing too much on her appearance, then you're missing the larger points
oddly,
that you raised.
It is an oddly objectifying and sexualizing photo in ways that I, again, the whole thing
is, but it's weird. I'm sure there are some people, it's designed to be provocative.
It's designed. It's a Vanity Fair cover. It's an Annie Leibovitz shoot. They are going for a certain thing. You're supposed to be, I think, provoked, and you're supposed to think about, okay, now what does this say about you know, our concepts of beauty. And what does this say about our concepts of gender? And
what does it say that I can look at her and say, she looks attractive?
She looks nice, you know, or she looks good, or she looks great, or she, yeah, I'm not really my thing, or whatever it is, you know, she's not my type.
And there's some people, by the way, who would say that's not so, I'm sure there are some people who would say this isn't her playing up a sex appeal as it is her really playing up the woman. And this is the way you would style any woman for this type of magazine. And it gets complicated. You're right. I mean, I think
does it take away again? But then does it take away from the idea of like, oh, look? Because the point isn't that a man can identify the gender that he feels he is, and he believes that, you know, he is a woman in every other way other than sex parts, and become a woman and be hot. That's not the point.
No.
And so I mean, you understand? But so I think that. This is one of the things about that cover that I think is an interesting choice that I, as more people begin to comment on it, and it is such a small group of people, bigger than you probably think, but generally speaking, a very small group
of
people.
Very underrepresented.
Very underrepresented, where everybody's kind of learning at the same time, like I said, where, you know, I don't even know where to go to find all the voices. There are a couple people that I know about now that I didn't know about before. You know, I know about Christina Carl, who writes for baseball for ESPN. I know about Laverne Cox, and now I know about Caitlyn Jenner. And beyond that, I don't really, that's about all I know.
I feel it's
the Mike Penner story, which is just awful. Yeah. We have the LA Times. And so, you know, I think it's in the shadow of that, like the glamorousness of this and the TV show and the photo shoot and all that, when there's a side of it that you see with Mike Penner and what he went through and just and end up killing himself, and just Google the story and it's awful, that I find the in a lot of ways playing out the glamorousness of all of this to be a little unsettling.
It is.
But I still get it. And right. I understand the choice.
Well, look, I feel like I think the important thing, and I think that this is something that you can reasonably put upon whether giving it or receiving it, is just the idea of respect. Are you being respectful mm-hmm. in the way that you try to talk about something? And I think for
do you take the issue seriously to believe that Bruce Jenner isn't some, you know, wackadoodle who's just trying to get attention because he loves being on TV, or that he has, as has been reported in many places, struggled with this issue for going on 30 years?
Right. I think most reasonable people can recognize when respect is being given, and I think most reasonable people can receive respect, as opposed to looking for a fight. And you want to make sure that you don't end up creating a fight that makes people unwilling to ask questions or makes people unwilling to talk about this because they're just worried about
getting shamed. Because then it gets, just go back to full circle, that gets to what I was saying before. I suspect the level of support, whether you're talking about Michael Sam, whether you're talking about
Jason Collins,
whether you're talking about Caitlyn Jenner, is not as high as the overwhelming support on social media would indicate, because as we know, the I'm not saying the correct thing, but the brave thing, if you want to call it that, in terms of criticism, it's not supporting Michael Sam, it's not supporting Caitlyn Jenner, it's criticizing them. Whether, you know, and then because you're opening yourself up to what is the unpopular thing mainstream wise.
It depends on where you do it. I think people sometimes forget that the Twitterverse or the social media universe, which I think tends to lean left, is not the rest of the world. And you can feel free often, I mean, sadly, but truly, to be critical of a Caitlyn Jenner or be critical of Michael Sam, so long as you do it in the right spot.
But if you, in a mainstream sports world, an athlete, any athlete who's had negative things to say about Michael Sam was crushed.
Yeah.
In my opinion, rightly so. But if you have, you know, I feel this about, you know, in gay marriage, which I support, but there are times when not to get too far afield here, but when I feel like if you have a criticism of it, or if you, you're still coming around on it. You have legitimate things that make you uncomfortable. People are too quick to brand you a bigot, too quick to brand you anti-gay or whatever it may be. Like things like that, you know, it can be difficult to express an opinion that you know in the mainstream, particularly mainstream media, can be unpopular.
Well, but the good news, though, is that if that starts to reflect the mainstream, it also means, by definition, that a lot of that support Caitlyn Jenner would be receiving is genuine.
Yeah.
So again, goes back to my original point, it can be both.
Yep, I would agree. Okay, so the finals. That's sort of the last thing to get to today. The NBA finals begin Thursday. Golden State hosting Cleveland. It is, I think, pretty widely anticipated.
I think most people think it's
going to be a lot of fun. But most people also don't think it's going to be a very long series. I've seen a lot of Golden State in five, Golden State in six, a couple Clevelands here and there. But this is one of those situations where, like, everything you look at says Golden State is a better team. They were better in the regular season. They've been better in the playoffs. They're healthier by a fair amount because it seems like Kyrie Irving's not going to be certainly not fully back by the time the playoffs or by the time the finals really get going. And obviously Love's not playing. Everything points to a reasonably short series in favor of Golden State, except for LeBron.
Yep. And LeBron is one hell of an X factor, if you want to put it that way.
That I'm even thinking about who I think is going to win this series is 100% a testament to LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, Golden State has a lot of different looks that they can throw at him. They've got a lot of capable wing defenders, or, you know, Draymond Green, if you don't quite consider him on the wing. They've got a lot of different looks you can
Green
throw
on
at him.
They can put Harrison Barnes. They can throw Clay. They've got a lot of people that can guard him. They've got looks that they can throw at
Kyrie Irving, because no matter how healthy he is, he's still their second biggest threat. Mm-hmm. And they've got different ways that they can guard him. They've got Andrew Bogut at the rim. I mean, there's so many different ways
length
that they
everywhere can, so they can switch on a lot of stuff.
There's so many
close on shooters.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that the Warriors can beat you. And we've seen LeBron in the finals before, and I'm not even counting 2007 San Antonio. I mean, the fact that LeBron got that Cavs team to the finals, that was the accomplishment. That team was fucking garbage.
Right.
They were
horrible. And by the way, the people at 538, however you want to splice the movie, the numbers around or whatever, have rated all of LeBron's supporting cast and says that this group that he's got there with him now, particularly with the diminished Kyrie, is barely better than that one.
Yeah, they're wrong. They're way the hell.
Point being that this is not an elite group. This is not Miami of any of the Miami teams.
Right, and we've seen a team led by LeBron ultimately not be able to overcome that against a better team, as great as LeBron is. But at the same time, I mean, he's hard to bet against. I mean, he's hard to confidently bet against. I think it's going to be Warriors in seven. But by definition, if I'm taking Golden State in seven, I think Cleveland can win.
Yeah, there's nothing about this when you start putting it down on paper, because the Warriors have the ability to deal with LeBron. Because if this is one of these, well, it's a jump shooting, high powered offense against, you know, a tenacious defense and all that, but it's not. It's the best offense in the NBA and the best defense in the NBA against Cleveland.
It's going to be tough.
Intellectually, I feel like it's a no-brainer choice to go with, especially assuming Clay can play and everything seems to point that Clay can, to say that Golden State's going to win this in six. I think six is like, and I don't do that, but that means they'd have to close. I sort of pick the number based on how much better I think one team is than the other.
I just hope that if Golden State wins, please, let's not do the LeBron is now 2-4 in the finals bullshit.
No, again, I mean, if you don't think that this team, Andy, you believe that this team is much better than the one from 2007, it's still not great.
No, it's not great. And again, the guy's been to the finals five straight years.
Right.
And I don't even count 2007.
No.
I consider this his fifth
lost,
finals.
I think, one where you could reasonably say, should have won that one. I think it's fair to say. You've lost one series where you're like, that one you should have won. But, you know, last year, they had no business. They were not the better team last year. It wasn't even close. You know, and then they won two, and then they blew the first one. They should have won that one.
Right.
That one they should have won.
And again, I don't count 2007.
No.
I am not going to hold the fact that he could not beat the Spurs that LeBron's team could
with
not
what,
beat. The
like
Spurs.
Larry Hughes?
Yeah, Larry Hughes and Ogauskas are his next two best players, which again is why I don't care what numbers they crunched over at 538. Kyrie Irving in a wheelchair is better than anybody on that 2017.
Right. So, but the point, either way, it is not a strong supporting cast. It is hard to criticize a guy for losing a series that everybody
you
thinks he's going to lose.
This is what it is, and this is admittedly kind of dumb analysis, but I'll say it anyway. This is a huge, huge task for LeBron as a player. Obviously, other guys are going to need to step up, but in the end, this is really going to hinge on LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge task, and he just seems ready. He seems really up
oh, right.
to
That's
doing
what I'm saying.
This.
Like, everything about it, like, but like, so.
And that is dumb analysis.
Completely. Intellectually, that is not something Nick Friedel would do.
No.
Intellectually, no, this it's was an my easy own. Call for Golden State. Best offense, best defense, great home court advantage, the ability to deal with LeBron, multiple offensive weapons, and a clever coach good at deploying them. They can beat you in all kinds of ways. They do not have to score 120 points to win and all that. And, you know, you need great finals performances all the way through from Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith. Good players, but come on.
You never want to rely on J.R. Smith.
Yeah, and so I think Cleveland is better than maybe they're getting a little credit for, but it's just like, God, you just like LeBron is playing so flipping well. You look at it and you're like, I can kind of totally see how he could just win this series for that.
You know what?
I'm very tempted to take the Cavs. And he's shooting, and it's totally imagery because he's shooting like 40% from the floor. I mean, there are holes that you can pick in the sort of the efficiency of LeBron as he's dragged this group of people through the playoffs. But the sort of ultimate emotional Hollywood style effect of it all is I think he can do anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Including win this series, even though I'm going to go ahead and go with my head and say Golden State in six. But I'm not nearly as comfortable with it as I should be, given how good Golden State has been through the regular season and in the playoffs. And I know the finals are a different thing, and you've never been there.
You know what they are, Brian? They're a different animal.
Right. But, you know, other than LeBron, it's not like those guys have...
Well, nobody
you know,
important. There right. are a lot of guys...
Great.
All...
James Jones has been there.
James Jones is the only guy in the rotation right. who's been there other than LeBron.
Right. Great. Congratulations. That doesn't matter to me.
No. At this point, Mike Miller and Kendrick Perkins' experience isn't going to amount to
no.
much. Or let me put it this way. You certainly hope Kendrick Perkins' experience isn't going to amount to much.
If we have a chance to find out, then Golden State's
going
to win this.
State
I'm going
four.
To win three. all right, so an official prediction, Golden State
Golden
seven.
State
you
seven.
Said, I say, Brian, so that's Andy. Brian says Golden State in six. Keep you updated on what's going on with the draft as we get closer and people start heading into El Segundo for their summer vacations. And that is about all. We'll see everybody
next
time.
Oh, make sure to listen to our podcast
yes.
with Sarah Kalana. You can find it on our Twitter feed at Cam Brothers.
Sarah Kalana.
She's very, very funny comedian, and it is, by the way, Sarah Kalana.
Yes. As we discussed.
We clarified on the podcast.
See you everybody next time.